Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning and welcome to Africa Link this Tuesday, the 24th of May. I am Jane Ayeko Kumet in Bonn, Germany. In today's edition, charges are dropped, but controversy continues for embattled South African President Jacob Zuma.
President Jacob Zuma has showed no intention whatsoever to step aside. The president seems completely unperturbed by the fact that this will now keep him in the status of being an accused or at least a suspect in a very important corruption matter.
Opposition protesters held demonstrations Monday against Kenya's Electoral Commission. Some of the protests later turned violent.
We want to express our displeasure.
We have converged here peacefully to express our displeasure with the IEBC. We are not here to provoke anybody. Therefore, we demand the police to escort us peacefully to the IEBC offices.
All that and more coming up in the next 25 minutes, so don't go away.
Top story.
South Africans have been reacting differently to the decision of the National Prosecuting Authority, NPA, to appeal a court ruling that President Jacob Zuma should face almost 800 corruption charges. Some say the decision has no basis in law, while others think it was deserved. The battle to have Zuma brought to book has been spearheaded by the Democratic Alliance Party for over 7 years. The charges are in relation to a multi-billion-dollar arms deal. They were dropped in 2009, clearing the way for Zuma to be elected president, but the charges never disappeared. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
On Monday, the NPA head, Sean Abrams, announced that NPA will appeal the court decision ordering it to reinstate charges against President Jacob Zuma.
I have decided to apply for leave to appeal against the judgment of the full bench of the Pretoria High Court.
Abrams said accepting the decision of the High Court will undermine the independence of the prosecution to independently decide when discharging its duties.
The judgment is also a matter that seriously affects the separation of powers. This is an important matter of principle.
On April 6, 2009, the then NPA head, Mokote Dimshe, announced he was dropping 783 corruption-related charges against President Jacob Zuma. The reasons given at the time was that secret tape recordings had surfaced showing that the timing of those charges was meant to stop Zuma from being president. However, a full bench of High Court judges last month ruled that the decision was wrong and should be revised. Legal expert Professor Pierre DeVos says that the Supreme Court of Appeal has already made a ruling on a similar matter, which invalidates the NPA grounds of appeal.
The reasons given for the appeal, from a legal perspective, it seems a little bit bizarre, actually, because I'm not sure why they are appealing at all to the Supreme Court of Appeal, who has already, on a legal basis, settled this legal matter on which they claim will be the main basis for the appeal.
But Mohamed Wada, from the Society of the Protection of South African Constitution, says he supports the NPA's decision to appeal.
It is not in the domain of a court to decide that a person must be prosecuted or not prosecuted. It is, according to the South African Constitution, the sole authority of the National Prosecuting Authority.
The NPA has listed 6 grounds of appeal against the decision. It says the court erred by finding that the 2009 decision to drop the charges was irrational. But many say Abrams' decision to appeal the court ruling instead of pursuing the charges against Zuma is itself politically motivated. However, Abrams has categorically dismissed this allegation.
There is no person that can claim to have any inside knowledge or influence over me or of the NPA.
The corruption charges leveled against Zuma are related to kickbacks he allegedly received from a state arms deal before he was the president of South Africa. However, as everyone waits for the Supreme Court of Appeal to decide whether Zuma will have his day in court or not, one thing is certain. That decision is not expected anytime soon.
Tuso Kumalo reporting. President Jacob Zuma's problems do not seem to come to an end. It looks like something new comes up every now and then. From what we've just heard, the NPA seems to be bent on clearing the president. So what can we make of the state prosecutor's decision? I put this question to Philip Dovet, associate editor at the Mail and Guardian newspaper in South Africa.
Well, we're not at all surprised the prosecutors are taking this matter on appeal. They were always going to take it on appeal. What does surprise us is that prosecutors have chosen to go to the Supreme Court of Appeal rather than the Constitutional Court directly when they're addressing constitutional matters. And also on what appears to be the thinness of the appeal, based on the papers we've seen so far. The entire appeal by prosecutors basically comes down to saying, well, the court got it wrong in the first place. We were right all along, and you should find differently. As best we can tell, that is not an actual appeal, and it doesn't stand much of a chance of success.
What does this tell us about the country's legal system, considering that the High Court and the Directorate of Public Prosecutions are both public institutions?
This matter is about the public perception of the prosecution service, and that it's very, very important for the sake of democracy that the prosecution service be seen as being impartial, as being effective, and as being trustworthy. What is happening, unfortunately, is that this appeal comes on the back of a very strong court finding in the first place, which found that prosecutors had acted poorly and irrationally, in the words of the High Court in Pretoria. So to now give us an appeal which is quite thinly based, and to announce that appeal in a fashion that was sometimes somewhat nonsensical, I don't think it's doing much for public perception of the reputation of the public prosecuting authority.
President Zuma has endured months of criticism and growing calls for him to step down after a series of corruption scandals. Do you foresee him finally giving up the presidential seat?
It does not appear likely, no. President Jacob Zuma has showed no intention whatsoever to step aside. The president seems completely unperturbed by the fact that this will now keep him in the status of being an accused or at least a suspect in a very important corruption matter. He seems to believe that that does not affect his ability to do his job.
What does this mean for the ruling ANC party in general?
It doesn't appear that this decision really affects the African National Congress as such.
Now, talking about voters, do you want to insinuate that actually the upcoming August elections will not be affected in any way or another by this decision or the whole scandals that have surrounded Jacob Zuma?
We know that the August elections will be very tough for the African National Congress. It stands a serious chance of losing local control of the commercial capital, Johannesburg. And the problems that the party faces in those areas are perhaps linked to President Jacob Zuma's scandal, but they're not limited to the scandals around the president. Infighting within the party has played a large role there. The party's inability to jumpstart the economy and deliver on promises of employment that it has made consistently.
Philip Dovet is an associate editor with the Mail and Guardian. He specializes in politics, society, and economics.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Protests against Electoral Commission in Kenya throughout the country turned violent as police acted to stop the demonstrations. In Siaya County in western Kenya, two people were reportedly killed by the police. It was the first time the demonstrations spread beyond Nairobi. In Mombasa, residents are worried that sympathizers of terror groups could hijack the protests. Kenya's main opposition, the Coalition for Reforms and Democracy, in short CORD, is pushing for the disbandment of the Kenyan Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission. They have vowed to carry on the protests until they are heard. From Mombasa, Eric Ponda reports.
At least seven supporters of the anti-electoral body, among them Mombasa County Assembly Speaker Theodas Rajwahi, were arrested during the early morning demonstrations as they gathered to march to the IEBC offices. The demonstrators included Jomvu Area Member of Parliament Badi Twalib and his Mvita counterpart Abdul Swamad Sharif Nasir. They were joined later by Mombasa Governor Ali Hassan Joho, who vowed that the protests would be peaceful.
We want to express our displeasure.
We have converged here peacefully to express our displeasure with the IEBC. We are not here to provoke anybody. Therefore, we demand the police to escort us peacefully to the IEBC offices. Today, you are in police uniforms, but tomorrow, you will be a common citizen. Therefore, if you want to be respected when you are out of the police duties, then you should respect the citizens also.
For more than 3 hours, business remained closed as CORD supporters took to the streets, with many traders fearing vandalism. The protesters were dispersed by anti-riot police, but later regrouped and were able to deliver a letter to the IEBC offices. Opposition luminaries led by former Prime Minister Raila Odinga said last week that the protests would be spread to other towns in Kenya. However, tension is high in Mombasa, which has experienced relatively calm following months of anti-terror campaigns. Residents fear that terrorists may try to hijack the protests to cause chaos in the port town. Muslim leaders led by the chairman of the Supreme Muslim Body in Kenya, SUPKEM, Abdul Ghafur El Busaidi, are calling for dialogue, saying they are ready to mediate.
The most important thing to do is to have an open-minded dialogue, and the IEBC commissioners should also be open to listening to all parties, not only the political groups. We have various groups of stakeholders, the women, religious groups, youth, and all Kenyans. The IEBC should not be selfish, and the dialogue should be conducted with sincerity. That's when, as a nation, we will arrive at an amicable solution.
Says the chairman Abdul Ghafur El Busaidi. In Nairobi, anti-riot police deployed tear gas and water cannons to disperse protesters. Demonstrations were also violently broken up in the lake town of Kisumu, where the opposition CORD enjoys popular support. CORD leaders have stated that they will not relent in the demonstrations until all commissioners at the electoral body leave office.
Eric Ponda in Mombasa.
Africa on the move.
Africa is indeed on the move. In Cameroon, a young engineer developed a device that easily checks heart problems. CardioPad is the name of the device. Created by Arthur Zhang, the CardioPad has the potential to save thousands of lives as it comes in handy in a country where sophisticated medical equipment is rare. DW's Dunja Sadak met with the young inventor in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé. Her report is now presented by Charlotte Lomas.
The medical center of the University of Yaoundé has been packed since the early hours of this morning. Men and women, many of them students, are lining up to get a checkup. The doctors here are using a new medical device that's being tested, a device that was invented by a Cameroonian here in Cameroon. The magic device is a tablet computer that can record an electrocardiogram. One third of all Cameroonians suffer from high blood pressure, which is a herald for heart disease. As a result, 17,000 people die each year because there aren't enough cardiologists. Atua Zhang is the young engineer who came up with the new device. He's a student who's been working on the tablet for 7 years.
I was a young student at the École Polytechnique, and I did an internship at a clinic in Yaoundé. That's when I realized that there are less than 40 cardiologists in Cameroon for 19 million people, and I wanted to find a solution for that. So first I developed software, and when I wanted to improve my software, I built a gadget in 2011 that I called CardioPad.
Banks refused to give him a loan for his work, so Zhang asked for help on social media and was heard. The government and an American software company gave him 26,000 euros, which Zhang used to found his company. He then built 20 cardio pads, which are being tested in clinics right now. The advantages are obvious, Zhang says.
Let's say in a village there is, for example, only one doctor and one nurse, but no cardiologist. So in order to be treated, patients would have to travel long distances. But thanks to CardioPad, doctors can simply do the medical examination right there in the village and send the data to a specialist, who can then make a diagnosis. The patient gets treated, and most importantly, without having to travel for it. That saves time, money, and reduces the risk that the patient could cause an accident when driving to the specialist.
Zhang's device is pretty easy to use. Wireless sensors are attached to the chest of a patient. The electrocardiogram sends the data via Bluetooth to the tablet, which means the data can be sent to any doctor in the country, who can then make a remote diagnosis. Instead of 30 euros for the medical exam, it costs just 45 cents. That's one of the reasons why so many people are lining up here at the medical centre in Yaoundé. Doctors, researchers and engineers have been testing the device. Perhaps the results have already prevented a heart disease and saved a life, says the president of the initiative, Dr. Rudy Anu Nana.
We have been able to diagnose many cardiac arrhythmias due to stress already. Sometimes when a student has cardiac arrhythmia, this can mark the beginning of an embolism, which can then turn into a stroke. The faster we recognize something like this, the faster we can give medical tips.
Zhang's pad has been on the market since January. Each cardio pad costs 3,000 euros. 300 cardio pads have already been sold, 60 of them in Cameroon, the rest were sold abroad, and many were sent to Asia. Inventor Zhang has received numerous prizes and is already working on his next invention, for instance, a beeper that lets patients call an ambulance from anywhere in case of an emergency.
That report was prepared by Dunja Sadak. As the World Humanitarian Summit kicked off in the Turkish city of Istanbul, the African Union resolved to focus on one theme, namely, One Africa, One Voice and One Message. The summit brings together world leaders and politicians, including the German Chancellor Angela Merkel, and aims to come up with a common strategy to end human loss and suffering. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has called for humanity to be placed at the heart of global decision-making. Temi Topi Omolade, read the details on the summit.
The first ever World Humanitarian Summit is an opportunity for the world to rally together and commit to addressing today's greatest challenges by helping those fleeing conflicts and rebuilding communities in disaster-hit areas. Africa has witnessed recent humanitarian crises, from the Ebola outbreak in West Africa to the continuing crisis in South Sudan and Burundi. The summit is an initiative of United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon to bring people affected by humanitarian crisis together with new partners, including the private sector, to propose solutions to the world's most pressing challenges and to set an agenda for continued action in future.
We must aim high to end poverty and leave no one behind. Together, we will reinforce efforts to save lives and ensure human dignity for the millions of people affected by crises.
During the event, the African Union will focus on the theme One Africa, One Voice and One Message. Kenya's decision to close the world's largest refugee camp in Dadaab is seen by many analysts as one example that goes against this theme. They argue that it also goes against the African spirit of brotherhood in times of crisis. Brian Wanyama, a political analyst, believes the closing of the camp will lead to a humanitarian disaster.
The children born in Kenya and those who have been integrated in Kenya is going to be a very big challenge, because some of these young people, especially those below 20 years, have not known any other place as home apart from Kenya.
But the Kenyan government has defended its plan, citing security concerns. Al-Shabaab militant killed at least 147 people, mostly students, at Garissa University in northeastern Kenya in 2015, and the Westgate shopping mall attack, claiming at least 67 deaths in 2013. The summit is crucial for the planet, but also for Africa continent, because the humanitarian landscape is changing rapidly and Africa faces numerous challenges, both political and environmental.
Temi Topi Omolade with that report on the first ever World Humanitarian Summit.
Making a difference.
In May, making a difference. It looks like it's time for women to stand up for fellow women. In Ghana, one female movie producer is leading the campaign to change the perception of her people, especially their preconceptions about female politicians. Shirley Frimpong Manso has produced a new television series highlighting the challenges a female politician aspiring to become Ghana's first female president has to face. The movie is to be released just ahead of the general elections in the country. Isaac Kalechi reports.
The show must go on, Ankara. Nobody's abandoning Nene's ship. We're just steering it to shore.
I need to think about this.
Mm-mm. We don't have time. The election committee must announce their decision tomorrow.
Excerpts of a television movie series being screened at the Silverbed Cinema at the Accra Mall in Ghana's capital. It's called The Champagne and depicts the struggles of Ghanaian politicians, especially women, when seeking political offices.
Oh, is it true that the president is your biggest supporter and your campaign is funded by him and his friends?
Even the president of the country has to subject himself to rules and regulations of our party.
The brain behind this new TV series show in Accra is Shirley Frimpong Manso, a world-celebrated movie producer and director.
I think my focus is women in politics and not necessarily the ideal woman. You know, not the married type, not old enough, not unattractive enough. A possible woman president who is saddled with real woman issues.
Frimpong Manso, who is in her late 30s, says the movie uncovers the political landscape in Ghana. She expects audiences to appreciate the challenges that women politicians go through while climbing the political ladder.
In politics, especially, and this is not even just Africa, around the world, a woman has to be of a certain status to matter, you know. I have seen what Hillary Clinton has gone through.
This movie is being screened at a time Ghanaians are preparing to vote for a new president and members of parliament. Women, though, continue to be poorly represented in political positions in Ghana. Former First Lady Nana Akunedo-Ajiman-Rawlings was recently nominated by her party, the National Democratic Party, to contest for the presidency.
They won't give it back unless...
Unless what?
Unless I give them connections at the airport. They want to ship some stuff.
I see.
Audiences who were at this screening session say the movie mirrors the Ghanaian society and what people do to win power. They are impressed with Frimpong Manso and the quality of her work.
Champagne has opened our eyes to a whole lot. It actually has this drama or twist to it, looking at some of the episodes and then the scenarios.
Actors and actresses are equally happy with the vision and work ethics of Shelley.
My name is Lynn Bento. I played Julia Hawkins in Champagne. It's really amazing working with Shelley and her team, and I enjoyed and I learned every single part of it. She just has the eye for perfection. I don't know how she does it.
Shirley Frimpong Manso is highly motivated despite the slow pace with which she recovers her investments and the challenges working in the creative arts industry in Ghana. Her inspiration, however, is to see a change in the Ghanaian society and its politics.
At this point, it's not necessarily the money. It's a passion to be able to impact society, the passion to be able to empower young girls strive for what it is that they believe in and change the perception of the Ghanaian woman in the minds of these young girls, yes.
Isaac Kalechi in Accra. Let's now remind ourselves of some of our main stories today. Embattled South African President Jacob Zuma's problems continue as charges are dropped, but controversy continues. Two people have reportedly been killed in Kenya during opposition protests that turned violent. Remember, we welcome your opinion on this program. Please send us your comment via text message to 49160-957-59510, an email to feedback.africa@dw.com or a letter to AfricaLink DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. That's all we had for you today. Thank you for listening and join me again tomorrow.